is Jared of the GM on ESPN 102.5. The game, the Titans are headed to the AFC Championship game, Kansas City, on Sunday after their thrashing of the Baltimore Ravens on Saturday. And it's 5 o'clock on a Monday, which means it's time for the GM's three things. Three up and three down, three things the GM liked, three things the GM did not like, and apparently the GM has to break the rules for everybody again.
Again. There's too many.
All season long, you've had three things you've liked, you haven't liked. Last week, you had five things you liked, one thing you didn't like, and apparently this week, it's even worse in terms of how you've broken the rules.
6-1, yes. This would be a bad. This will drive you crazy, but... I mean, you're on your way to the championship game. I mean, you can't find that many negatives.
Well, there were, so this just shows you how much of a Titans nerd I am. I woke up at like 7 a.m. Saturday because I treated Saturday like a work day because we're on the air at 2 o'clock. I woke up and I rewatched on YouTube the Titans-Steelers divisional game. There's a lot of things you could have said you didn't like about that game. Eddie George got concussed. Eddie George fumbled the football. You're letting guys wide open in coverage. You blow a huge lead. You miss a kick. Like, all kinds of things. I said earlier today, I think the Titans played a near-perfect game. So when you play a near-perfect game, how many things can there really be that you don't like? I mean, other than to say, oh, I didn't like the false start Taylor Lewan got in the first quarter that moved you back. I mean, how much is there to not like? But it is the GM show. We're all living in the GM's world. We, you know, the chair stinks and it squeaks on the air, but God forbid we take it away from the GM. So without further ado, let's go right to the GM's six things that he liked from Sunday's game.
Number one
for me, and I think this is probably true for most, is the two coordinators. And that would include Vrabel, too. Vrabel did an outstanding job of getting them ready. But the two coordinators put together a game plan that was just off the charts good, taught it all week long, and they went out and executed it, which is, I keep saying, is just, it's such a beautiful thing to see when you actually see it happening, and yet you know how infrequent it is that actually occurs. So I thought the coordinators were just outstanding.
I would agree. I think the one thing that I'm trying to figure out with the Titans coordinators is, are they better at the in-game adjustments, or is it the game planning, or is it the communication to the players? Because you have to, Floyd, I felt like Dean Pease not just had all 11 guys on the same page in the right page, but every guy they brought in that would come into the game. Woodyard would come into the game. He knew what to do. Hooker would come into the game. He knew what to do. Crookshank would come into the game. He knew what to do. Tremaine Brock, they all knew what to do. And I think that that's a really underrated skill as far as a defensive coordinator is concerned, because you have like five coaches under you and then five players at each position, and yet everyone on defense seemed to have an idea of what they were doing.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough to manage.
Number two.
Second thing for me is the red zones on both sides of the ball. You know, the red zone, it came down, and we said this. When we got down the red zone, we were going to have to score touchdowns because they were such a high-scoring offense early in the games, and that we were going to have to hold them to field goals. And the red zone, we ended up 3-for-3. We were perfect, and they were 1-for-4. And so therein lies kind of the story of the score. But at the red zone defense, and it got tight down there a couple times for the defense, but they find a way to pull it out. I don't know. They must spend hours and hours and hours on the red zone because they are so good in there, really big.
Vrabel was asked today about how they, you know, went from not being able to do anything in the red zone on defense to now being the best at red zone in the defense. And Vrabel said something along the lines of, I mean, I knew we were good at it, even though the numbers didn't say it this year. Like, I knew because last year they were good at it, and I think that that's starting to play out. I mean, they look like last year's defense. I'll say this about the playoffs, and this may be something that hurts a guy like Lamar Jackson when it comes to the playoffs, and that is player focus is much higher in the playoffs than it is even for a regular season game.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like there's no, like, attention to detail, and because it's right there in front of you. And I wonder if, because when you play the Ravens during the week in the season, it's just another game, you kind of take it like that, as opposed to, we got to stop this quarterback at all costs or else we're going home. And if that maybe is why Lamar sucks so bad in the playoffs. That takes us to the third thing you liked.
Number three.
Number three for me was the defense played exceptionally well. Not only did they get the turnovers that we had to have, and that I think we, you know, deep down we kind of thought they were there to get. It was a matter of, are you going to have the opportunity to get them? You know, the first interception bounced off the receiver's hands. You know, make of that what you want. The second interception was just an awful throw. I mean, he threw it right to him. And then the fumble, you know, which was gigantic, and we kind of felt like it was there. And then the fourth down stops. I mean, the fourth down stops were as good as a turnover, and we ended up scoring on both of those. So, you know, I mean, those type plays made by this defense in this game were gigantic. Really, really big.
The GM has to break the rules. So the fourth thing he liked from Saturday's game.
Fourth thing for me is the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball.
Oh, the fat guys were great.
I thought that the offensive line, once again, for whatever reason, is showing in the playoffs that they can not only block people and block them effectively, but that they can dominate. And they are doing that. Defensive line this week, I think, just similar to what we talked about with Dean Pease, they had a little bit of a different game plan. They went in there and executed that game plan and did an outstanding job. On top of all that, you know, not letting him take off and scramble, you know, many times, and getting some sacks, including a strip sack. So line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball was just outstanding.
And it was funny watching TV all last week because all they talked about was how physical the Ravens were. And then I watched the Ravens, and I'm like, they're not that physical. It's just Lamar Jackson playing three-card Monty with the football. It's like, does Lamar have it or does the running back have it? I don't know.
Yeah.
And that's what they do. And they're not like a physical, bruising, push-you kind of team. Then I watched the Titans just maul them. And I was like, yeah, they're not physical. I forget what people on TV say. It doesn't matter what people on TV say. They're not physical like the Titans. And that's how the Titans, when the Titans have been good, 2002, last time this Titans team got to the playoffs, those guys, Kevin Carter, Albert Haynesworth, Keith Bullock, Brad Hopkins, those guys were physical. Eddie George, Steve McNair, the Titans' bread and butter has always been physicality. What is the fifth thing you like?
Number five.
The fifth thing, and this team has really developed this, which is they have a knack to make key plays at key times. And I know part of it is the coordinators. Part of it is them, you know, blitzing when they should and pulling some kind of trickeration out at the right time, you know, all of those kinds of things. But, I mean, I know the players are going out there, and they understand. They have a great feel for what they're going to need to do, how important my particular area is, and the things I'm going to have to do to win. And a great example of this is Tannehill. You know, people are saying, oh, Tannehill only threw for whatever it was, 80, 90, 100 yards. You know, but he scored three touchdowns. You know, he threw two passes, ended up being touchdowns, and he ran for one. So, I mean, you know, all the numbers and stats that you want to scoff at or take pride in, you know, so be it. But I think this is a great example of how those things kind of fall by the wayside when you're doing key things at the right time.
Is anybody really complaining about Tannehill's lack of passing yards?
No, I mean, but you hear people on the press say, yeah, but he only threw for, you know, 80 or only threw for 90. And how is that, you know? And I think that's, you know, not watching our team, not seeing what they're doing.
And the sixth thing Floyd liked.
Number six.
And you can't, you know, you can't go without talking about Derrick Henry and what he did, Ryan Tannehill, what he did. But, you know, Smith and Raymond, I thought, made a couple of giant plays. Casey made a giant play, caused the fumble that was recovered by Simmons. And our two safeties made plays. You know, I mean, Byard got an interception that got it all started. But Vaccaro
made
some plays now.
He's so good.
He is excited about being in the playoffs. And I think he's one of those guys that, that you kind of feed off, because he knows, you know, what a bunch of these young guys don't know, which is you don't get here many times. You better take advantage of it while you can.
My favorite thing about Vaccaro is you were talking about a former Titans Oilers linebacker, Eddie Robinson, and how Eddie Robinson, you know, the fans weren't buying Eddie Robinson jerseys and nobody thought Eddie Robinson was a great player, but that everybody on the team thought, hey, Eddie Robinson is the man. And I think Kenny Vaccaro is the same way. He's not a fan favorite. He's not on the posters. He's not, people aren't buying Kenny Vaccaro jerseys, but boy, does Kenny Vaccaro make a bunch of plays for this football team.
And I think they do love him. I mean, I think he's a valued member of this team.
So are we out of things that you like, or do we have one more?
Yeah, no. Now we got one negative.
One thing Floyd didn't like. Can I guess it?
Number one.
A.J. Brown and Derrick Henry.
Wide receivers.
Not A.J. Brown, Derrick Henry. A.J. Brown and Corey Davis.
Wide receivers. The wide receivers had a grand total of two catches for 12 yards combined. Both of them. And I will say this, Davis did have one touchdown. But other than that, two catches for 12 yards.
Now, the one catch that, that A.J. Brown did have.
Don't even try it.
Don't tell me
don't
that. This is the coach.
Try it.
So, Ian, if you could, please pull up Mike Vrabel from today.
It.
I asked about A.J. Brown because this has been a big topic on Jared and the GM, and it has been about, could A.J. Brown get off against good receivers? And the answer is overwhelmingly no. So I asked the coach today, hey, when you watch the film, is he getting open against these good receivers? This was today.
When you flip on the tape, AJ's gone up against, throw the stats away, but just the tape, AJ's gone up against two of the best corners in the league the last couple of weeks. What have you seen from him in his ability to get off against those guys and get over
them? I mean, AJ just keeps working every week. I love his attitude. We've handed him the football. We've thrown it to him, you know, on short routes. One of the huge plays of the game was a third down play where, you know, he catches it in traffic. Gets upfield, doesn't try to run sideways, runs a guy over, gets a first down, and we're able to score a touchdown on that drive instead of settling for a field goal. So, you know, it'll be a new challenge this week, you know, for him. And, you know, they mix coverages, and they'll play post safety. They play Tampa, and they'll blitz. You know, so every week's a new challenge, I think, not only for AJ, but for the entire team.
Answer, no. When I flipped on the tape, he was not getting open. And Mike Vrabel doesn't want to say that, because if Mike Vrabel says it, then it becomes a huge deal about the fact that AJ wasn't getting open. But he's gone against two really good corners, really three of the last four.
Three.
And he has not gotten open against any of them.
I think in three games, he's got a grand total of like three receptions.
Yeah, one against New Orleans, one against New England, one against Baltimore.
Awful.
He's still not as bad as Davis. Davis can't get open against a linebacker.
Awful.
He can't get open. He had Tyus Bowser on him, and he could not get up. It's a linebacker.
Awful.
Corey Davis was picked. Corey Davis was picked ahead of Patrick Mahomes, and he can't get open against a linebacker. And I go back to my original take, which is Khalif Raymond has more, and it's not even close. But Khalif Raymond has more big-time catches this season than Corey Davis does. And that's embarrassing. No offense to Khalif. But that's Floyd's one negative. We'll have three things Floyd wants to see against the Chiefs, three things Floyd does not want to see against the Chiefs on Friday, live from Kansas City. get excited about that. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Before the narratives all get out there, and the media will do this over the next couple of days, but why did the Titans win? And more importantly, why did the Ravens lose? We'll discuss that next. Jared and the GM live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're streaming on the Game Nashville app.
How much does this loss stain Lamar Jackson's season?
A little bit. Not much. I was watching Get Up this morning with my boys, obviously Swagoo and Booger was on there, Ryan Clark, Dan Orlovsky, and all these folks. And a whole bunch of folks were talking about anybody that was critical of Lamar Jackson is idiotic. I want to announce to the world I'm an idiot. Because I'm going to be critical now. Let's be very, very clear. The man wasn't perfect. Now, it wasn't his fault. Don't get me wrong. I'm looking at John Harbaugh and the fact that, you know what, you got cats on your own teams calling themselves chokers. Because once again, you got to the playoffs and can't win a damn playoff game. You should have been better defensively. You shouldn't have been punched in the mouth. You should have found a way to prevent Derrick Henry from having 195 damn yards. Okay, just running roughshod over you. Somebody do something to him. I'm talking about the great Earl Thomas, who is a man, got shoved aside like a piece of paper. One run. Turned around by Derrick Henry. I was shocked to see that. So that's props to Derrick Henry. Don't get me wrong, but you got to figure out a way.
That was Stephen A. Smith today talking about why the Titans beat the Ravens. So a lot of this is going to come out, and a lot of the people around the country are going to talk, and it's going to be about Baltimore. And it's going to be, how could this 14-2 Baltimore team get beaten by the Titans? And people will blame Lamar. And they will say that Lamar Jackson showed that he can't compete at a playoff level. Some people will say it's about the defense not being able to stop Derrick Henry when everybody knew Derrick Henry was going to get the ball and he ran for 195 yards. And a lot of people will say, well, it's Harbaugh. Harbaugh did not have them ready to play, as you heard Stephen A. Smith hit all three of those in his little rant. Floyd, why did the Titans win this game? Was it because the Titans outcoached the Ravens? Was it because the Titans out-executed the Ravens? Was it because Lamar Jackson really isn't all that good? Was it because the Titans are underrated as a team? Why, before everybody starts getting their narratives all worked up and everything else, why did the Titans win this game?
Well, I mean, they knew how to win it, and they went out and executed it. I mean, they knew that, uncommon to NFL teams, and I don't want this to sound like a slam, I mean, you wanted them to be forced to throw 59 times. That's what you wanted them to do. And if you could take all that run stuff away, I mean, that was going to make a world of difference. Now, Ingram being hurt, was that a factor? Absolutely. But getting ahead versus this quarterback made a world of difference, because the combination of not having Ingram and being behind by 14 points, now the coordinator says, hey, we got to open this thing up. And that's where they made the mistake. But I'm not ragging on them for that, because I'm sure they thought they would still be okay with it. But you know, that's not his game. That's not his best game. And I say that, he still threw for, I don't know, 300 yards or something, whatever it was. But, I mean, he's, generally speaking, that's not the way they want to play.
I think they lost because the fourth down plays. I mean, I thought those two fourth down plays were, and what ensued after the fourth down plays were backbreakers. I mean, the Titans scored 14 points of their 28 off of the two fourth down plays. They don't get the first fourth down play. Titans go score a touchdown on the throw to Khalif Raymond on the next play. That was a total game changer. The next fourth down, it's 14-6, and the Ravens are inside the red zone, and they go for it on fourth down, and they don't get it. And now Derrick Henry goes for 66 yards two carries later, and the next thing you know, the Titans are knocking on the door. They throw the pop pass, and now they're up 21-6. I mean, the difference in a football game between 14-9 and 21-6 is astronomical.
Oh, that ends up being a 10-point swing.
Oh, my God, in that kind of game. So, and I'm not blaming Harbaugh for going for it on the fourth downs, though I would not have gone for it on at least the the second fourth down. The first fourth down, I mean, if your bread and butter is always going for it and you're 8-for-8 on the season, you know, if that's going to be your MO, fine. But it's like they say in basketball, if you live by the three, you die by the three. And if you live by going for it every fourth down, hey, we're going for it with Lamar. Well, if Jeffrey Simmons and Jarrell Casey and Daquan Jones get a big push, then you lose. And that's what happened. But I thought the fourth downs were really the fourth downs and then the turnover. So if you take the Lamar interceptions and the fumble, which also led to a score, if you take that and you combine that with the turnover on downs, which doesn't count as a turnover, but it is a turnover on downs, the Titans scored all 28 points off of Raven turnovers.
Right.
That's why you won the game.
Which, well, yeah, but what's that a result of?
Them turning it over.
Well, yeah, but what's the result? Why are they? All three of those turnovers were in what kind of play?
Pass play.
There you go.
Well, no, two. I'm talking about the two turnover on downs were run plays.
All the turnovers. I mean, all the turnovers were in pass plays, and they were thought they had to pass, and that was the case. The fourth downs, in my mind, were a result of them saying, hey, we can't give the ball back to him now. You know, we've got to get a first down. We've got to march down here because, you know what, we haven't stopped Derek and we haven't stopped what they're doing. And if we can't, I think it's going to be really, really difficult for us to catch up. And that's exactly the way it ended up. But I think they thought there would be more involved.
Let's go to your phones. Angel's up next, 615-737-1025. What's up, Angel?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Just a couple of things. Just wanted to say, first off, all due respect to the Ravens. They're a hell of a team. But, man, our boys came to play from the linemen on back to the secondary. Defense really was outstanding. And second off, man, our receivers, we got to do better on the pass game. Man, we got to put some points up on the board, and we ain't going to be able to stick with Kansas City playing the way we just played. Anyway, I'm going to hang up. I'm leaving Saturday to go to Kansas City. Tighten up, man. I'm going to have
to. Sounds good. We'll see you there, Angel. Thank you for your call.
We'll probably see you.
So I would agree with the receivers. I mean, the receivers, boy, Floyd's been hard on them. I thought maybe AJ could figure it out. Although, did I not tell you on Friday, and we got kind of in an argument about this, and you got mad, and I'm like, don't be mad at me. But I said to you, I go, I'm just telling you, those two receivers aren't going to get open. And you said, well, if those receivers don't get open, they'll lose. Well, they threw the ball to Khalif Raymond. And it worked. Khalif Raymond, Jonnu Smith, that worked. Is it going to work in Kansas City if they throw the ball to Khalif Raymond and Jonnu Smith?
It may work, but you're going to have to do it six times.
Now, remember who scored touchdowns? That Corey Davis and A.J. Brown combined one catch for 17 yards. Davis was inactive in the game against Kansas City that the Titans won. Remember who caught the game-winning touchdown? Do you remember who caught it?
No.
Adam Humphries.
Oh, I do remember.
Who I don't even know if he exists anymore.
Yeah.
But
it'd be nice if he showed up.
He probably will not show up this week. Well, here's my thing. Maybe he does show up this week because if the guy hurt his ankle 2 months ago and it's taken him this long to get back, why would they not just put him on IR? There's no more games to miss after this game and the game after it. It's funny because we argued a lot during the year about could the Titans be Super Bowl contenders, and you're like, Super Bowl contenders? No. Could they get to the playoffs? Yes. Well, now I feel like there is no more could they be Super Bowl contenders. They are legitimately contending for the Super Bowl on Sunday, which is exciting.
And this is why
you hate the championship.
Absolute most important thing is making the playoffs. And that's why when every year when you ask me and we start talking about it, I say, hey, just get in the playoffs. Just get in the playoffs. Because once you're in the playoffs, you don't know what's going to happen. I mean, anything's possible. And I think we're living examples of all of that. So, you know, next year when we start talking, it's going to be, yeah, how do we get to the playoffs? Just get me to the playoffs, baby.
More of your phone, 615-737-1025. But coming up next on Titans Monday, Floyd. You got to get your guy. You got to get him in check because it may come back and bite the Titans in the rear end. We'll discuss. Jared and the GM. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app.
And they fake it. They snap it to Reed, and he's stopped by Sorensen.
him. They snap it to the up back. And Reed is denied.
We just we felt like, you know, we weren't going to be able to punt it too many times today. You know, we felt like that we had to try to manufacture some points, manufacture some yards, and just didn't work out. You know, it's just something we decided to do, but the play didn't work.
That's your guy, Floyd. Get Bill O'Brien some help. Please get him some help. What was he thinking with that fake punt yesterday?
Well,
amongst
no
other
idea.
Things that I want to know about Bill O'Brien. But the fake punt, what was he thinking about yesterday?
I have no idea.
Now, I would say this. I was rooting for the Texans yesterday. Were you rooting for the Texans yesterday?
No, I mean, I wasn't rooting for anybody. I was just enjoying the game.
Why? Are you of the belief that whoever wins that game is the better team, so you're going to have to play the better team no matter what?
Well, I mean, I think the team that won is certainly a good team.
Well, I think the team that won is the better team, which is why I was rooting for the Texans. The way I thought about it was this. I was thinking if the Texans win, the Titans are going to go to Houston and beat them. I mean, I really thought the Titans were going to beat the Texans. Then the Texans go up 24-0, and I'm thinking, oh, my God. Maybe I'd rather play the Chiefs than the Texans because the Texans are up 24-0. They're looking pretty good. And then Bill O'Brien doesn't go for it on fourth down, kicks the field goal, goes up 24-0. Bad punt return, bad kickoff return. They got everything in motion. And then that stupid fake punt.
Well, the part, and it was funny because, like you said, he kicked the field goal on a fourth and inches right before that, which I have absolutely no problem with. But you're thinking, okay, now that was a conservative move.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to go up 24 and I'm good and safe and let's go. Then he turns around and runs a fake punt. You say, wait a minute now. This guy goes from Mr. Safe to, you know what? This is going to be wild. I mean, it wasn't, like I said before, even if you get it, you might get another first down, then you punt. So, what? And if you don't get it, it very well could be the ball game. Now, I'll say this. The part that was the most interesting thing about that whole thing was the switch in momentum and what it did to the two teams.
After the punt or before the punt?
After the fake. Because now Kansas City was a different team. Remember Kansas City before that? They had, I want to say, three or four or five drop passes.
I would say at least five or six, yeah.
I mean, they were off. They could not get out of their own way. They were bad. And Houston was on fire. Then, all of a sudden, you know, you make another big special teams play. I mean, special teams are gigantic in this game. But you make a special teams play for Kansas City. Now you're on fire. You know, now they score on four or five straight possessions. And I want to say the longest any of the scoring possessions was five plays. They were scoring in two plays. They were scoring in three plays. They were scoring in two plays. Then they were scoring. Then the 1-5 player, you know. So, I mean, they went literally from dead to lights on, look out. And the Texans went just the opposite.
So you didn't think it was the kickoff return by Hardeman that got that all started with the first touchdown? You thought it was the fake punt? I think the fake punt gave them a path. I think the not going for it, first of all, I think Bill O'Brien's a moron, and I think he should be fired. I mean, if I own the Texans, I would fire Bill O'Brien today. And the reason I would fire Bill O'Brien is because he's a moron. I mean, at one point yesterday during the game, they're down by three scores in the fourth quarter. Did anybody else see this? They were down by three scores in the fourth quarter on fourth and four, and Bill O'Brien runs the punt team on, and Deshaun Watson comes over, is like, it's fourth and four, and Bill O'Brien's like, oh, yeah, it's fourth and four. Well, time out. Let me get the punt team off. I'm like, Bill, like, are you watching the game? Like, take your head out of your laminated
car. That wasn't what he was doing.
Why he called timeout?
No, that wasn't what he was doing with that whole exchange. He wanted them to use a timeout. He was trying to catch them in an exchange and get them to use a timeout. And they didn't do it. They just went ahead with it.
Down
and
by so 17, now, he's trying to steal Chiefs timeouts.
Now that forces him to do a timeout.
Down by 17. You're thinking of the first one. You're thinking of when he ran the offense on the field on 4th-and-1 and then called timeout and then kicked the field goal to go up 24-0.
No, I know that one. I mean, that was that. Now, that may have been a screw-up.
You're talking about when Watson came to the sidelines.
They talked him out of that.
You're talking about when Watson came over to the sidelines and was like, it's only 4th-and-4. And he was like, oh. And then Bill O'Brien ran down there and called timeout?
Yeah, no, didn't you see? He was on the headset. He was talking to him. And you could see him go, no, that. And then, you know, he ended up calling the timeout. He wanted to try to get him back on the field and couldn't do it. So then he called the timeout.
I'll have to take your word for it. It looked so stupid to me. I mean, it looked.
Well, it didn't go very well, that's for sure.
I would fight. Like, they don't have a GM. He's running it. He's already traded away his 2 number one picks for the next couple of years. So I don't know what he was doing. I will say this, and I tweeted this out yesterday. The two big things in the game, first of all, Houston had no cover for Travis Kelce. Zero. They had no way.
Don't get ugly now.
Now let me go with where
don't
I'm going with
get ugly.
This. I tweeted this out and I said, the Titans don't have anyone who can cover Travis Kelce either.
Okay.
But that being said, I don't think the Titans blow a 24-0 lead. If the Titans get a 24-0 lead at Arrowhead on Sunday, I think you're going to the Super Bowl. I don't think you're blowing a 24-0 lead. Also, it is so refreshing to be able to say, if such and such happens, you're going to the Super Bowl, and not have you look at me and chuckle like, Super Bowl. Like, yes, if these things happen, these unlikely things that will have to happen to Kansas City, if these things happen, you're going to the Super Bowl. Is that not crazy to say? Think about, like, the Titans are one game away from the Super Bowl. It's pretty crazy. But I'll go back to this again. If you're up 24-0 on the Texans, you're not. I mean, on the Chiefs, I don't think you're blowing the game, because what's Vrabel going to do if you get up 24-0? He's going to turn around and he's going to hand it to number 22, and that in and of itself may keep Kansas City. Plus, Kansas City will be frustrated and field position. I mean, Houston, everything that's on the checklist of how to choke a game, Houston did it. And I heard Stephen A. Smith today make an interesting point about, you know, he expects a little more from Deshaun Watson now. You go up 24-0, and all of a sudden you start to feel Mahomes coming on you. You're Deshaun Watson. You got to go make a play out there. And I don't disagree with that assessment either. Let's go to your phones. Let's go to Lance on Derrick Henry. He's been waiting patiently. Thank you for calling. Go ahead, Lance.
So I got two things real quick. Number one, Jared, I got to give you an accolade, and that really pains me a lot.
Thank you.
But you've always talked about Franklin, Creed Franklin, and how he takes the top off the defense. Well, I told my wife, we were sitting there, and they got that ball on the 50-yard line, and I'm sitting there going, see that little number 14? They're fixing to throw a touchdown pass to him. And I don't understand how Harbaugh didn't know that was going to happen. But this old fat country white boy, he found it, and he threw it. And then the next thing is, on my way home a while ago, I heard you say to Floyd, tell me if you ever seen this with Derrick Henry, anybody like Derrick Henry before. Yeah, the Oilers and the Titans have been blessed 3 times with it. Earl the Pearl, he's the only one that ever knocked down a damn steer at Texas. You got Eddie George, and you got Derrick Henry, and I think Derrick's the best out of all three, and I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you for the call, Lance. That's very high praise right there. One guy's in the Hall of Fame, one guy's on the door of the Hall of Fame, and Derrick Henry has like 3,800 career rushing yards.
Yeah, I mean, that is a pretty good line of running backs. I mean, for a franchise.
Yeah, no, but...
And each one been really, really key to winning a lot of games, you know, playoffs, getting closer and closer and closer. You know, with Earl, it was the old, I'm going to kick the door in speech by Bum. And Eddie, of course, got us to a Super Bowl. Not not him alone, but Eddie's era. And then now Derek's trying to do the same.
Mikey's up next. Thank you for calling. Go ahead, Mikey.
Hey, you guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
Just one thing regarding the game the other day. I wanted to give a big shout-out to 11-year-old Jared. You did it.
Oh, my God.
You remember what you were talking about last Friday?
Oh, I know. And I loved every second when they showed Baltimore fans in the stands. Thank you for your call. When they showed the Baltimore fans in the stands, I loved it. I loved every second of it when they showed those fans and just the distraught, what is happening to me in that crowd? I loved every second of it. Every second of it. You know why? Because you make sure that they remember forever the night they played the Titans. That's why. And those 11-year-old fans will remember forever the night they played the Titans. Coming up next, Mike Vrabel, what the crux of what he had to say. We'll discuss that next. Plus, Andy Reid gives an update on what may be the story of the week. We'll discuss Jared and the GM, Titans Monday. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game. Jared and the GM, we will be live in Kansas City Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We will have editions of Jared and the GM. That means, Floyd, at least, what would that be? 14 straight days of Jared and the GM?
14 straight?
No, it'd be 13 straight days of Jared and the GM.
Oh.
13 days you get with me without a break. Be excited about that?
Oh, I'm thrilled.
On to Kansas City, Mike Vrabel today met with the media. Mike Vrabel, what about those 7 touchdowns in a row Kansas City had, and what do the Titans have to do in order to keep Kansas City from having 7 touchdowns? This is what Mike Vrabel said about that.
7 touchdowns in a row for Kansas City yesterday. When you see something like that in a football game and the momentum turn like that, what do you preach to your guys of how they can get on a roll?
You know, it's you've been out there as a player and you've seen it. You know, there's plays that happen, and you know there are only 5 or 6 of them that happen during the game that you're going to need. And, you know, the message is just because you give up a play, you're still playing. You know, just because they got the ball on the 30-yard line doesn't guarantee them a touchdown. But there can't be any panic. There can't be any flinch. That's when you need your leaders and your coaches to get everybody to kind of take a deep breath and figure out that at that point in time, you don't need any cheerleaders. You need players and coaches that can get players a call, and then players can go out there and execute and not have any panic.
Floyd, what do you think about that? 7 touchdowns in a row. What do you do to stem the tide so that the Titans don't get caught in something similar against Kansas City?
Well, I mean, first of all, you've got to, you know, for us, we're going to be able to take the ball and hopefully move it on offense, which certainly helps your defense. Because if you go out there and you go 3 and outs about 3 or 4 times in a row when they're hot, I mean, it's going to be a long day. So, you know, you have to prevent that from happening. But I mean, they are, you know, that offense is potent. I mean, it is strong. And they were on top of it yesterday. And I think they're to the point now where, you know, they've already, I think Andy's, what, 1-8, I read morning against us. So guess what? This one's for the Super Bowl. I mean, this one, they'll be ready. I don't think we can count on much of that we saw before.
Meanwhile, Mike Vrabel asked about the dominant play of Taylor Lewan and Roger Saffold, the left side of the offensive line for the Titans. What has he seen?
The offensive line as a whole is obviously playing well, but that left side seems to really be coming together. How have you seen that whole process of Saffold and Lewan just come together and play the way that they're?
Well, we can't put any more money over there. I know that. So, I think the time that Taylor missed, it's, you know, it was probably naive of me to think that could just happen in 2 days of practice. But I think that there's a comfort level. And with those guys over there, we've talked that the teamwork required to work in combination with a guy next to you, whether that's in the pass game and they're running a stunt or they're running a game or they're a pressure or the combination in a run game, whether you're on the backside or the front side to work, you know, through a player to another. Those are things that we, are going to need to have. And, I think Nate's development and Jack's really steady play, and then Ben kind of the glue that holds everybody together.
That was what he said about the left side and the entire line. What have you seen out of the offensive line?
I mean, compared to where we were at the beginning, I mean, it's 180 degrees. I mean, they have...
Although you don't need to be a former general manager to be able to give that diagnosis.
They have come back, the whole way. And the bottom line is, I think he hit it on the head. You just can't miss camp, or you can't miss, extended amounts of time, especially in the offensive line. Come back, jump into the offensive line, and expect things to work, especially if you're the guy you're playing next to you've never played with.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we ran into. So what happened was, I think it made both of those guys worse. And now we're to the point where they are playing the way that we expected. The right guard part was just a maturation process. And I think him finally maturing and getting to a point that he can play in the offensive line helped Conklin. So I think now Conklin and he are they're able to do things now that they couldn't do the first, 6 weeks, 7 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever it was. We're right where we need him.
Meanwhile, Andy Reid was asked today about the status of Chris Jones. There is Chris Jones an All-Pro? I think he was an All-Pro. I mean, he is an all-world defensive tackle, and he is maybe their best player on their defense, and they got some good players on defense. He was not active after suffering a calf strain during practice last week. He was inactive yesterday. Andy Reid was asked for an update today. This is what Andy Reid said.
Yeah, I don't know that right now, Adam. We'll just have to see how he does it. I mean, this is a day-to-day thing, and it was that way, after it happened the other day. So we'll see how he does.
Just from looking at his on-field workout there a couple of hours before the game, it didn't look like he was anywhere close.
Yeah, he was struggling.
Difficult decision in that regard yesterday with him, up or down?
Well, no, not that. I mean, he couldn't push off and go, so pretty easy decision right there.
So that's what Andy Reid said. Tonight, right here, ESPN 102.5, the game coverage starts right after Jared the GM. The national championship game, undefeated Clemson, undefeated LSU. Floyd, give me some keys in tonight's national championship game for each team. We'll start with LSU and Joe Burrow. What do you think some keys for LSU are tonight?
Well, yeah, I mean, they're going to have to do what they've been doing. And I think they'll do that on offense. I think on defense, I think this secondary is better than Clemson's. And I think this secondary is going to have to play lights out. And they're going to have to pay, because this group of receivers they're facing may be, as good or better than anybody they've faced. And I think they probably know that. But, I mean, the good players in the game of this magnitude, good players got to play good. And that's who all those guys are. That offense, I think, will be dynamic. I think that'll be really interesting. But the same is going to be true with them. I think the biggest, the part that if I was one of the coaches on either side, I would be concerned about is my secondary, if I'm Clemson, my secondary covering the LSU receivers.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the... in my mind right now, if there's a mismatch, that's the biggest mismatch.
What's the key for Trevor Lawrence and Clemson as they look to defend their title?
And that's just it. I mean, they're going to have to work to get those receivers open. And, the thing that Trevor did that helped himself last week is that he ran the ball very, very well. Not last week, but last game. And because of that, I mean, he's added another dimension that is really going to be a factor in this game, because I don't know how many yards he had running last game, but I mean, he had a ton. He had long runs. So I think that is going to really help that offense too.
I want to see Travis Etienne both as a receiver and as a running back and see if he can do what he did to Ohio State against LSU tonight. He is he's a good player. And I'm with you. I think the secondary, Singletary and Delpit versus these receivers from Clemson should be a great matchup as well. Who wins tonight, GM? Clemson versus LSU. Who wins tonight and why?
I mean, I've picked Clemson all year long, you know. I mean, I think it's...
Even though you picked LSU on Friday?
I mean, LSU. That's what I meant to say. LSU all year long, and I expect them to do it. I mean, it's kind of it's a destiny thing, you know. They've come too far, worked too hard, and I think they've got the Heisman Trophy winner. They've got all these kids that are going to be high draft choices, and they need to go out and perform, and I think they will.
I'm going to go with LSU. I think LSU wins 45-35. That's it for us. ESPN's coverage of the 2020 College Football National Championship is next, followed by The Game, right here on ESPN 102.5, The Game.